Welcome to the City Confessions. I'm Marianne Yip, a native New Yorker, and I'm here to discuss all the thoughts that go through the minds of people living in New York City. Being that I live in the city that never sleeps, I come across people who are constantly in a rush. I would like to take a moment to sit down and talk about what's on their minds and what keeps them up at night. So sit back and let's get ready to dive into these confessions with people I know and people that I've never met. Hi guys, welcome to the next episode of the City Confessions. For this month of March, I'm actually doing something special and different. Instead of interviewing New Yorkers who are natives or who are residents, I decided to interview, I guess, visitors or people living in New York with an accent because I just think it's super interesting and it's great to see what other people think of the city. So today I have Helen Chick. She is a freelance digital content creator and writer. And we've actually been following each other for a really long time on Instagram.
That's
and
right.
She's visiting. So I was like, hey, hop on my podcast. So welcome.
Thank you for having me. I don't know what you're talking about, accents. You all have an accent to me.
It's crazy. We had this conversation and we all do, but I've never had an Australian like friend.
It's funny because like I've never realized how Australian that I am until I know a lot of friends back home who are true blue, you know, fully grown Australian, you know, functioning men who will look at me and go, wow, you're really bogan. And I probably should explain that term.
Yeah, it's I have no idea what that
so
means.
A bogan in Australia is essentially like the equivalent of your redneck. So I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah.
But like that is what I have been likened to. So I don't know. I think it comes and goes. And I feel like after being here for like 10 days, I'm starting to pick little bits and pieces of the American accent up.
I mean, I've been picking up like Australian phrases. I'm like, what am I doing? But I love it. Yeah. I just feel like people will be like, you're not like inauthentic, but like, what are you doing? You know? But it's not even like you try. It's just when you're
you
with somebody.
Yeah, and you kind of want to mimic the other person. And you kind of, I think it's human nature as well that we do it. But look, I'm going to be very confused when I get back home. People will go, what is happening with your accent? So let's see if I can keep it up for this podcast.
You will. I'm sure people will actually enjoy it and probably would want to listen to it because I'm literally obsessed with your accent.
Oh, thanks. That makes one of us.
Okay, so let's start with saying, well, give us background of who you are, what you do, and why you're in New York.
All right. In a nutshell, I have not always been in this career of, you know, being a lady of leisure who travels around the world taking pretty photos and writing about her colorful dating life. I have come from a finance background. When I graduated uni, did the whole, you know, let's get myself a big girl job at a big bank. And within, I think, 6 weeks of starting the job, I pretty much realized that it wasn't for me and needed to make a change. And started a blog, started the whole Instagram account and used my weekends to basically have a creative outlet, as cliche as that sounds. And within 2 years of working full-time whilst juggling this side hustle of mine, decided to just take a leap and do it full time. And I feel like it is a very common story these days that people are doing it. They're finding that, you know, the usual 9-to-5 is unfulfilling as shit. And am I allowed to swear on this? Okay, good. It's unfulfilling and we're all looking for something more in life, you know, something that we enjoy doing. You know, we want to wake up every single morning feeling like, yes, we're gonna kill it today. We're gonna, you know, conquer the world, whatever it is. So that was 2.5 years ago that I left my banking job, and I've now since been doing this full time 2.5 years, in a nutshell. And you know, and I don't like the term blogger, influencer, all that sort of stuff. I find it very, I think it's too rudimentary to what we are as people. We're all entrepreneurs. We all work for ourselves. We all try to innovate, be different. And we all wear different hats every single day. You know, one day I may be a photographer, the next day you're modeling, the next day you're a writer, the next day, you know, and I'm also a, you know, a single mother. So you wear so many different hats that to like label it as something as, you know, rudimentary as a blogger doesn't sit right. So when people ask me what I am, I'm just a freelance, you know, a freelance digital content creator. I write, I dabble in a lot of different things. And this year I'm trying to branch out and obviously become and solidify myself as a writer. So that is my reason for being in New York. I came over New Year's Eve to celebrate with a couple of my friends. We thought, why not? NYE and NYC. So that kind of came about and then fell in love with the city. It was too short. It was a 12-day trip. So I decided to come back and use New York City as a case study for my book, which is all about modern day dating.
Yes, and we've had stories about them and they've been honestly super hilarious.
Oh, I've got really plenty. Insightful. I've got plenty. It could feel like a book, essentially.
Yeah, I really can't wait to like read it. So you're from Sydney.
Yep.
How would you describe, I think, the difference between Sydney and New York City? Just because I've never been to Australia.
Oh, wow. New York is a whole lot of other kettle of fish. It's for one, such a big cosmopolitan city. And when you look at Sydney and our CBD, essentially, it is probably, I don't know, a 50th of the size of when you look at Manhattan. So when you come, as an Australian, when you come to New York, you are instantly... like you feel a little bit overwhelmed because it's like literally, as you call it, a concrete jungle. And when you come to Sydney, I feel like there's a very, it's definitely not as fast paced, where I find New York is very, very busy. The life, the pace that you guys move at is always at 110%. Yeah. That's how people function here. Whereas if you go to anywhere in Australia, I mean, Sydney is our major city. And Melbourne would be too, but we move at probably half that pace compared to what you guys do over here. I mean, we have a good balance. We have amazing beaches and probably the best in the world, I would say. And you have a very nice balance in that you can be very active, outdoorsy, whereas I find New York to be a very much a nightlife, party, drinks, bar sort of culture. Finding things like even in winter, what did I ask? I asked one of my dates the other day and I said, look, is there anything to do outdoors in New York on a weekend during winter? And he said, to be honest, fuck all. So he didn't say fuck all because I don't think Americans understand what that means.
No, I struggle with that as well. Like sometimes when I'm thinking of like what to do with my friends, I feel like there's the movies, there's like bowling, there is, you know what I mean? But in terms of
outdoor, I feel like I haven't been bowling since I was in high school. Do people still go bowling?
Yeah.
Oh.
There's actually a bar called Fat Cat, and you can play Scrabble, ping pong, bowling, and then it's like a bar though. It's really
okay.
Cool.
Yeah. Do you guys have mini golf here?
I don't think. Well, maybe.
I mean, a lot of people go on dates and whatnot and do mini golf, which I love.
I know they have it in like Long Island, but that's like a drive.
Nah. I'm sorry. Even I'm not a New Yorker, and I'm like looking at all the places outside Manhattan, and I'm just like, I can't. And I get it now that I've like come and stayed here for 3 weeks that people just don't venture off.
No, I mean, we went to Brooklyn last time and I told you I wouldn't do it if it wasn't for you.
And we, you know, and we had a great time being tourists in your own city.
No, it was fun. Okay, so since you've been here and, you know, with a new perspective, I would like to know what's your favorite part of the city and what's your least favorite as a visitor and tourist.
My favorite part of the city, I feel like the fact that you can on any given night find a place to go and in my mind it's literally the city that never sleeps except for maybe at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday where no one's out and about, but which is still also a foreign concept to me. But on any given night you can literally find yourself at a place, a dive bar or a cute cocktail bar, you know, downtown, and you know there's always people around. It's not dead, it's just bustling, and that is probably my favorite part of the city. in that it's just you're never bored. You will always find something to do.
Wait, what time do like bars and stuff close?
Oh God, Sydney nightlife. Don't even get me started. It is non-existent.
Wait, really?
To the point that so many bars and clubs, it's impossible to go out in Sydney. We have the most ridiculous lockout laws, and it's just from stupid men abusing alcohol and basically ruining it for the rest of us. But we have laws in Sydney where clubs, you are not allowed admission into clubs after 1 a.m. No shots after midnight, no double shots in your drinks. That is what it's like in Australia. So there's like zero nightlife. Like, Friday and Saturday night are the only nights that, if you go into town that people are, out and about. But Monday to Friday, no chance. There's like zero nightlife to speak of. The streets will literally be empty by 7 or 8 p.m. It'll be empty. Like, even if you think, our main tourist attractions, right? So you come to Sydney, you see Bondi Beach, you see the Opera House, Harbour Bridge, all that sort of stuff. You'd think that, the equivalent in New York would be, Times Square.
Right.
Times Square is busy until, like, literally the early hours, no matter what day you go, what time of the year, it's always busy. But you get to Sydney, oh, my God, those places are literally, like, there's nothing happening. There's tumbleweed going across the scene.
What do you do there in those days?
Oh, fuck, that's a good question. Most people just go about their days. And as a tourist, people go out to dinners. And there are, like, don't get me wrong, there are cute bars. But if you're looking to, like, go bar hopping and have it be, like, a night where you could literally go anywhere, it doesn't really. You basically pick a bar, you basically stay there all night, unless it's a weekend.
Got it. Mm. And what is one thing you would, what's your least favorite part of the city?
Least favorite part of the city?
Is it the men?
Oh, you know what? I won't say it's like my least favorite part of the city. I think the dating scene that I've realized in the last 10 days, it's not ideal. And I'm kind of realizing why people are saying that. It's actually a very lonely city, and I can feel that. I've now experienced it, and like firsthand that I can definitely relate to what women here would feel like. And the culture of the dating scene is probably needs some work in my respect. But in terms of like anything that I don't like about the city, potentially, I don't know. I find people are too engrossed in their own world and time and schedules, that they're not very flexible. People are very rigid here. They're maniacal when it comes to planning around their days. And, this is my schedule. You kind of slot into it or you don't. And I think that's probably because it is such a busy city. Everyone's got, working their asses off to, make it in New York, that, it's kind of how the culture has been bred. And that's probably my least favorite part. Because, in Australia, we're kind of very easygoing people. We kind of just see whether, we go with the flow and literally play things by ear all the time. Whereas people here, they want to know exactly what hour are we meeting, where, in this place, I'm wearing this sweater in this corner. And that's how people are, like, what they're like here.
Yeah.
Whereas I never function like that back at home. Like, if we say that I'm going to see you on Saturday, we probably won't even talk about it until, like, late Friday night. And be like, okay, where are we meeting? What time? What time are you thinking? Are you having a big one
but
tonight?
But I think also it might have to do with your jobs, because, like, you're a freelancer. So your schedule is much more flexible, and you have more of a say of, like, when I can grab coffee or lunch. Like, a lot of people who have 9-to-5s, like a lot of my friends do, I know they can't meet me on, Wednesday at 12 o'clock.
Yeah.
So I have to kind of revolve around their schedule. And I think for me, it's more my personality. I'm super type A and super, like, schedule-oriented. But I also have learned to become a little more spontaneous.
Yeah, flexibility is important.
Yeah.
Flexibility is important, but I feel here people limit their interactions, and I'm speaking more from a dating perspective, right?
Okay, right?
That people give you only let's just say you're going on a second date, first date, whatever, you know, you meet for an hour, you kind of get a vibe for what you're like, as in if you kind of, if you mesh well together, mm-hmm. is probably the best term to describe it. But, you know, going for a second date, you both kind of decided that you're on the same vibe, you're on the same wavelength, let's meet again. But people still have this mentality that they'll limit the time that they give you to, I don't know, an hour or two before they need to be anywhere else, which for me as a concept, you know, if I am dating in Australia, if I've committed to, let's just say, Tuesday night, we're going for drinks, I would never ever schedule something afterwards. And I feel like that's a concept that people definitely do here. They're like, well, I can slot you in between 6 and 7, but then I have to be off somewhere else for 7:30, and then I'm going to be somewhere else at 10 o'clock, and then I can touch base with you and see if I can fit you in afterwards.
But the only, I think, I'm just trying to play the devil's advocate. Like, it's a good way to kind of, not escape, but like, you, first of all, in terms of dating, like, I feel like you don't know how it's going to go.
No.
So, for people who want to be precaution about it, can be like, okay, I have to be here at this place just in case.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But at the same time, what if you're having a great time?
Right. Then you could be like, oh, you know what? I won't go to my other plans.
Yeah, but at the same, that for me, I think, you know, you can either take the risk that meeting with that person could go spectacularly, horrendously, like it could be a disaster. It could be a massive clusterfuck. But there's also the chance that you'll literally get along so well that literally you will spend 4 to 5 hours with that person and it'll be great. And I feel like, oh, what happened to me the other day? Oh, so went on a first, before my first date with this particular male, I started talking, another male from a dating app decided to, you know, enter the picture and was like, well, what are your plans for tonight? And I was pretty straightforward and told him that I had a date. And he said, great, me too. Let's make plans to meet afterwards. And he's like, and then we can talk about how terrible our dates were. And for me, like, it was almost the fact that I was like, okay, well, wait, hang on. I haven't met my date yet and you haven't met your date. How do you know they're going to be terrible? And here you are on the assumption, which I think is offensive to the girl that he was about to see, on the assumption that it is going to be a terrible date and you're making other plans afterwards. So that in itself, I think, kind of summarizes the way the dating scene is like in New York. There's always like, you know, you plan for the worst, mm-hmm. but you're not open for the fact that the date could go really well. And to be fair, my date went spectacularly. Despite having a crisis beforehand, it still went spectacularly. I'm so grateful I didn't commit to plans afterwards. And it's really not in my nature to do it. I tried it one night and I found it exhausting.
Right.
Having to watch the clock because I was like, okay, don't want to be late to my next date. I feel like that pressure in itself, having to like force yourself to speed or guide your night or conversation with someone to a point where you're like, okay, now I've got to go now. See ya.
Yeah, and I feel like you're not 100% present with the person.
No.
You're not being fair to them.
Exactly. You're not giving them the time that they deserve.
Because your mind is elsewhere.
Yeah, because you're thinking, fuck, I got to be over here in like next half an hour. So let's try and wrap it up. Let's grab the bill and let's you know, have a smooch and then go. That's just, it's a very foreign concept to me. And for me, you know, I am time poor back in Sydney, but look, if I've dedicated that time to you, I'm going to give it a good hard crack. I feel like I was on a terrible date once and I'd already done my usual coffee screening, you know, to decide whether or not you're a normal functioning human being of society. And he'd passed the coffee test and then we went to a date. And within like 20 minutes, and I was like, God, this is not going well. I still gave him 5 hours of my time.
5 hours?
5 hours. And
what?
Like people were like, how did
what
you not work
for
it?
5 hours?
Oh, well, look, I usually am fairly, I like to give things a good go. And look, it might be that, you know, they were nervous and were just like trying to settle in and get a feel for the vibe. And he was, the entire night I kept thinking to myself, and there were points where the conversation did go great, but then there were bits where I was like, oh my God, Jesus, is this guy for real? But like for me, I just wanted to see it like through as long as I could bear it. just to kind of see whether or not it would turn. And I think I'm always very optimistic that I'm like, look, this guy. And to be fair, my first date with my current, second husband was a disaster. To the point where I was looking around at the ceiling going, thinking to myself, how do I abort mission? How do I get out of this? And it went so spectacularly bad that I'd never planned on seeing him again. But then a couple of weeks later, he reached out. He was in town, asked if we wanted to catch up, and went for a second date, and it was so much better. So I think, having that degree of, like, leniency and, like, understanding that some people might have a bad week, bad day, bad hour, bad fucking year, whatever. I just feel like I like to give people the time if I can spare it.
Yeah, I'm. That's good. I can learn a little bit from that as well, because I feel like I would probably just, I don't know, I'm all about vibes. So if you're right. If I'm like not feeling you, I might not like want to see you again. But maybe if there's something there, or like you want to give them a second chance, you can as well. But at the end of the day, I think your gut will tell you.
Your gut will always tell you. And, you know, sometimes, like I said, I thought that my first date with my second husband was so horrendously bad that we'd been chatting for months, and I had this build up thinking that, great, been chatting to this one guy for months, we're finally meeting, and it was a fizzle. It was definitely not a sizzle. And the way I thought of it was, you know, okay, well, maybe he's having a bad day or whatever. Kind of left it for a couple of weeks and then decided, you know what? Whatever I got to lose, let's go for it again.
So I want to shift gears a little bit and kind of dive a little deeper into like the second half of the podcast.
Mm.
And I usually ask my guests like, what keeps you up at night? I'm just curious to know what your, I don't know, I don't want to say insecurities, but just like concerns or fears. Because I feel like a lot of people who are New Yorkers talk about the city. And, like, the pressure to, like, keep up, or, like, confidence, or, like, being a people pleaser, or all that. But I'm curious to know, for you as a Taurus and somebody who's just, yeah, like, about your life, just, like, what's on your mind?
Oh, wow. Okay. I think in my situation, what keeps me up at night at the moment is, I have a lot of thoughts running through my head, lots of things that I want to do, and a finite amount of time to actually achieve them on any given day. And also balancing my work, travel, and also wanting to date, all of that comes at the price of sacrificing that time with my son. And that is probably something that has been a battle for me ever since I gave birth, because I wasn't entirely ready to have a child when I found out I was pregnant, but I wanted to have the child because, you know, for personal reasons, I was going to be reproductively challenged, and I didn't want to, you know, miss out and regret it later. So had my son, and don't get me wrong, don't regret it one single bit. I love him to bits, but it's a constant battle where we're, you know, as a society, we have expectations, as you know, on the mother, and I feel it's very unfair that, you know, we're expected to, you know, something as simple as breastfeeding can be a very, very controversial topic amongst people, and how much time you're spending with your child, how much time you're interacting and playing. Look, if anyone looked at my current situation, they would 100% be making comments about, like, you know, how is she traveling? Where is her child when she's traveling and going out, you know, doing all these fun things? And that is probably the biggest thing that I've struggled with in the last year, is achieving that. You know, I want to be a successful, you know, entrepreneur. I want to, you know, I want to succeed in life, but not for the fact that, you know, I have an ego, a complex where I just need to be the best and, you know, show it off or whatever. But it's more so that I want to be the best person that I can be, and I don't want to regret not giving it a good go. But then I also have a son to raise at the same time. So some days I feel like I'm a great mother. Some days I feel like I'm a shit mother. So that's probably the one thing that keeps me up at night. And having to obviously now battle with the fact that I'm soon to be twice divorced. I'm not even 30. And, you know, going into that, in like going on dates and telling people that is, look, I wear it like a badge of honor now, but still there are some days where you kind of go, fuck, where did I go wrong?
It's so interesting that you mentioned that, because I actually had a previous guest, Elena, and she doesn't have kids, but she's thinking of having children. But she's also very successful in her career right now. So she's at a point where she's like, she feels like she has to choose. Like, if I have kids, like, I may not, you know, be able to give like 100% to my career and just like that whole aspect. So I think it's interesting to see that, of course, other people can relate.
Yeah, it's a trade-off.
Right.
And, you know, some women are fine with, you know, assuming the role of, you know, being, you know, a child-rearing housewife, that, you know, that gives them purpose in life. However, for me, it's never ever been like, you know, my sole purpose in life is to, you know, get settled down, be the stay-at-home soccer mom, drop the kids off, go home, do the laundry.
And there's nothing wrong with that as well.
There's nothing wrong with it, but I feel like, especially in today's day and age, we're all very highly ambitious people. Mm-hmm. We want to achieve big things. We want to leave our mark. We want to, and that comes at the sacrifice of, you know, work and family life balance. And that's probably a reason why lots of, like, in our generation, so many people are having kids so late for that very reason. And, you know, I made the decision to have my child quite early before I have been able to actually achieve all my, you know, professional goals. And, you know, and I don't want to have to sacrifice either, you know, being a mum, but also wanting to be a successful career-driven woman.
Right. It's hard.
Yeah.
I mean, do you find it just like a struggle every day to balance it?
Yeah, every day. I'm very fortunate in that I'm not like other single moms, and I have a deep respect now, like, you know, for women who do undergo, like, have children, go through a separation, but don't have the support from their family because maybe for reasons, maybe, you know, the parents aren't with them anymore, or they live across the world or different state, and they have to juggle everything alone, work, raise a child, all of that. And that is incredibly hard. And I haven't even had to do that. And I already find it hard with help. So for me, I'm in a unique situation in that my whole family is actually very willing to support and give me the support that I need in order for me to achieve what I need to in life. Without that, I would 100% not be able to do half the stuff that I'm doing these days if I didn't have them. So.
Right. And I'm curious to know, like, when you made the decision to come to New York, like, how did you even approach it, knowing that obviously you have a son? I just, was it like a crazy internal dialogue that you had with yourself?
Yeah, there's always a guilt. There is always a guilt, a mum guilt that we, my friend and I would call it, it's a mum guilt that you think, okay, so I'm going away for 3 weeks. That's 3 weeks I'm not going to see my son. And, you know, lots can happen in 3 weeks, especially in these first few, like, couple of years of a child's development. Like, my son is now learning to, albeit they're not very understandable words, but he's starting to like want to learn how to speak. And, you know, there was a risk that I was going to be away and he probably could say his first words and I wouldn't be there for it. So it's when I left and made the decision that I would do it, it's one of those things where I'm like, look, I need to do this, and it is what it is. And my mum sends me videos of my son every day because she knows that I'd like to see him, even if it's, you know, a couple of clips here or there of him screaming his ass off and being a brat. But look, it's still great. And it is always going to be the hardest thing to leave my son behind. And I'm only hoping that, you know, within a couple of years where it's too hard to travel with a baby for me at the moment doing what I do. And within a couple of years, when hopefully he's like between like 4 or 5, I'd love to take him on my travels with me. Right now, he needs to stay put.
Right. Okay, so we spoke about, you know, obviously all of that, and thank you for sharing, by the way.
It's all right. I'm an open book.
So it's kind of related, my next question, but obviously I want you to kind of dive deeper or like maybe complete the sentence of like my confession is, and maybe you have, you know, touched on that just right now, but mm-hmm. if you have anything else, what it can be about dating or I don't know, the confession limit is just like endless. So
I think I've already touched upon it. My biggest confession is that I'm scared that I'm gonna fail as a mother. That's probably the biggest one. Everything else, I feel like I've got a pretty, like, it's, you know, life throws things at you. So, I mean, you have a career trajectory. You have a rough idea of where you want to be, how you're going to get there, and what time are you going to achieve this in. And for me, that's always been, like, my purpose has always, career-wise, has always been there. But for me, doing the whole motherhood thing is, it's still like I'm winging it every day. And my fear is that I'm probably not going to be a great nurturing, doting mother. And that's probably it.
Well, your son right now is one?
One. He just turned one.
And then how was that year like after giving birth until, you know, now?
Wow, it's a big adjustment. It's hard. It's crazy to think that it was a year ago that I gave birth to him. A lot happened to me in that year. Obviously, my husband and I separated, and we went through a lot in the first 6 months of where we just weren't in a good place. We were draining the life out of each other, and it was exhausting to say the least, and as well as like having a newborn and keeping him alive and, you know, happy and healthy, all of that. That just so the first 6 months were, in my opinion, probably the hardest things that I've had to experience ever in my life. Coming out of the marriage, look, it sucked for a bit, but it definitely was for the better. And making that decision that, look, whilst I wanted to keep the family unit together for our son, we just weren't in a place where we could reconcile our relationship anymore. It was too far gone. There was way too much contempt. And in my head, I would rather our son grow up in a family where he can see his parents happily existing happily as separate entities than to be together and miserable. So after the separation, the latter half of the year was a lot better for me in terms of where my personal psyche was at. I was, you know, mental health is one of those big things that I focus on because I've had to battle with mental health issues, you know, throughout my youth. But the first 6 months after birth are hard. You run the risk of having postnatal, and it's one of those things that you have to be really, really careful of. But the latter half of the year was a big transformatory, like, process for me as a person, working out who I want to be, and wanting to expel all the negative sort of energy in my life and just be a better person. And that last 6 months has been priceless for me. And it's one of those things where now I'm like, whatever you put out to the world, you'll get in return.
That's so literally my motto.
If you put out negative energy, the only people that you're going to attract are people who do the exact same thing. And for me, the moment I stopped, you know, thinking negatively, you know, and just being a Debbie Downer, as we call it, and immediately just started thinking, look, you know, it is what it is. Let's make the most of it. Be positive. Can you change certain things that have happened now? No. Then how do you fix it? And as soon as you change that mindset, and then just instantly ask yourself, like, how do I be a better person? You know, what can I contribute to, like, society in a positive way? It definitely opens up so many more doors for you, and you'll feel better as a person in the long run.
No, I love that. That was great. So if somebody is listening to this and let's say they're in an unhappy relationship or just, I don't know, kind of going through something similar with you, wanting to travel and, like, flourish, you know, in their personal life, professional life, but then also want to find out how to, you know, be the best mom or whatever. Like, what is your advice for them?
I think I think the biggest thing that I've come to terms with is that you can't win them all. And the moment that you stop trying to, it becomes a lot easier to accept. And then you kind of just go about with your what you need to get done, and you get your shit done. And when you try to achieve, or you beat yourself up because like you're flourishing in one area and you're not in the other. It's hard, and it does take time to kind of adjust that mentality. But if you accept that this is what it is, this is what I'm currently prioritizing, just own it, and the other things will fall into place. You'll learn how to incorporate and, you know, balance it out with time. There's no hard and fast formula for it. It's just you've got to do it, and with time you'll find the way to do it. But don't stress that you're not finding this magical, you know, work-life, whatever balance immediately. It is what it is, and we learn through experience, or at least we try to.
Yeah, that's definitely something that I'm trying to, take away as well. I think, maybe my ultimate goal, or I feel like, is to have my professional life and personal life kind of like align. You know what I mean? Because whenever you feel like one is, again, blossoming, the other isn't, you're not going to be 100% fulfilled. Mm. So I know you've been here for 10 days, and you have a few more, or what, a week
another
left?
Week? Yeah. Another week.
But from the time that you have been here, if you can thank New York City for one thing, what would that be?
Oh, fuck, Shake Shack. That's such a... I can't tell you how excited I was on the plane ride over of heading to Shake Shack.
Is there something similar in Australia?
No. I love Shake Shack. And
have you been to LA?
Yes, I have.
Have you tried In-N-Out?
No. Oh, okay. I think Shake Shack's better. I don't like the fries in In-N-Out. They're too soggy and kind of tastes like cardboard. But Shake Shack is like a godsend.
It's life.
Yeah, it's my life when I get to New York, and I love it.
Love hearing that. Okay, so I just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge you and just appreciate you for taking your time to come here to share your story and just be an open book. Ever since I even met you, which was not even a week ago, on the coffee date, I was like, wow, she's so your energy is just so addicting, and just you radiate this positive, you know, vibe, and just I don't know, I can always I have a great time when I'm with you, and I feel like you have stories for days, and just it's looking at you, I would have never known everything that you've been going through or you have gone through.
People can't say this, but I'm smiling from ear to ear from all this.
No, it's admirable. Really, it is. And that's why, even just these couple of days, I'm already trying to plan my trip to Sydney to come see you.
I can't wait. If you do, it'll be amazing. Honestly.
Yeah,
we should make
sure
it happen.
So, one last thing before we wrap this up. What are you currently working on? Tell the people.
Oh gosh, my biggest, and it's a little passion project, because I feel like I am very well versed in this subject, is modern day dating. It's definitely by all means not a relationship counseling book, because look, twice. Two divorces would say otherwise, that I'm not in a place to give that advice. But it's more so half memoir of my dating experiences for the last 10 years I've been on online dating, whether it be before Tinder came into play, it was online dating websites. In Sydney it was RSVP. I don't know if that was ever a thing here. I have been very much pro meeting people online. Again, in a city where you're time poor, you don't really have time to just hang out in a coffee or a bar and just hope that you'll lock eyes with someone and, you know, meet. So I'm very much for online dating, but I've also observed that how our dating culture has changed in the last 5-6 years since Tinder came into play, that, you know, there's certain things that I don't agree with it. And there are things that I feel that we should be doing differently when we do approach these, you know, use these apps, and hence why I'm writing this book. And I'm hopefully going to have it released, I don't know, middle of the year, but end of the year at latest. And New York is one of my little case studies. actually. It's going to be a very, very interesting case study.
Are you going to replace all the guys' names?
Yeah. So every experience, and like I have chapters dedicated to certain people in my life who've come in, and whether they're a fuckboy or if they've actually made a proper impact. Yes, right. That's the word. I have made an impact on shaping who I am as a person. They will all be in this book. However, I obviously won't name names there. But look, if you've known me long enough, you'll probably know who I'm referring to. And look, and some of them, you know, I won't stray too far from, you know, I've already known, like, you know, my disastrous New York romance. I've already got that chapter like written it out in my head like three times over. So it'll be interesting to see whether or not that specific person reads the book when it's released.
Oh God. So wait, I'm curious, what sparked that? Like, did you just wake up one day and you're like, hey, I want to write a book?
Actually, what sparked it was the fact that every time I caught up with any of my female friends, whether they be in PR, marketing, or just friends that are in a completely different industry, like finance or whatever, and they ask, so what's happening? You know, as girls, we love hearing about boys, right? It's like it's a topic that literally
takes literally
up.
That's literally my conversation 90, with you yeah. in our text messages. Yeah. That's like
that's what we 90%. Talk about. And it's just natural. I mean, you know, for girls to just talk about boys, and I'm sure, you know, guys to some extent will also do the same, but whether or not they admit it is probably a different story. But I'd always be telling stories, and people and all my friends would be like, we are dying to hear like all of your stories, and there's only so much time that I can dedicate to telling right. stories. And usually I'd have a catch up with a potential client, but I also treat a lot of my clients like friends, and they'll want to hear about my personal life, and I'm not afraid to like share it and be very honest about it but like we obviously need to talk about work, so I can only share parts of like what's going on in my personal life. So I made the decision that, you know what, I said I'm going to write a book about it, and it's not just going to be memoirs, but also my tips for like, you know, how like my best practices when it comes to dating, and yeah, that's kind of how it sparked. And ever since I've been mentioning this to anyone, everyone's very, very excited to read it, which puts a lot of pressure on me, because I'm like, God, me too. I'm excited to read it when it's done. Right now, it's just a jumble. I've got this book where I just scribble shit down as I think of it.
Do you have a working title?
No, I actually have now decided that I'm not going to even bother with the title for the moment, because once it's written, I feel like it'll come to me.
Right.
Because right now I'm still changing every day, like where yeah. the structure of the book or what direction, mm-hmm. I'm like, what stance am I going to be? Like, you know, like it's always forever changing for me. And until I've written the whole book and kind of worked out the structure of it all, I don't think this title is going to come to me.
I'm so excited, and I feel like honestly it's gonna just take off, just because like I know, well, I don't want to say I know you know you, but I feel like I've known you.
Yeah.
And like everybody, like every time we talk, it's just like you're like the best storyteller, hands down. And like you will make like I said an encounter that's not so pleasant just like super fun. And like that's the thing, like I feel like you don't take any of these like dating, like I don't want to say you don't take it seriously, but you don't take it personal.
Never.
Like if something doesn't go, whatever, it doesn't happen well or whatever, like you're like, I had fun and I've learned something, and then so be it, like move on next.
Yeah,
and that's great,
and that's how it should always be,
right,
in life. But I get it, like we're all emotional beings, and it's hard sometimes to be objective and just look at it and go, look, you know, it is what it, like, you know, you go on a date, you think it's gone well, they obviously think differently, and then they decide not to message you anymore.
Right.
I mean, like, we're all guilty of doing it, but at the end of the day, it is what, and again, this is the culture that we've bred yeah. today, is like dating society, that it's what it's like. And I'm very interested to see how, like, my thoughts kind of, like, about it develop over the next couple of
months. And it would be so interesting, like, for you to, like, read it back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because, like, oh, that was like, where I was at when I was 20, you know.
Yeah. And I'm also even thinking, I'm like, maybe I should create an audiobook and just like actually recount my stories. Like I obviously am much better of a storyteller in person mm-hmm. than I am potentially writing. It's not to say that I'm a bad writer, but I definitely feel like people get a lot more from me telling the stories face to face, or, you know, listening to my voice over the phone. Doesn't really matter.
Or I can do a podcast
about all my dating stories. Imagine the modern Sex and the City podcast. So, guys, this week I went on three dates.
I think there's a podcast called like Guys We Fucked or something.
Oh God.
Yeah.
Could go on for a while. For sure.
All right. Well, I just wanted to thank you again. I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I'll leave Helen's information in the description. Be sure to look out for her book that's coming soon. Yep. And maybe chase her about it so she can get it done.
Yeah. Just message me. Like, how's that book coming along?
Tell me about the new chapter.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me, guys.